We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is the Sixth Man Show, an Orlando Magic podcast with your hosts, Luke Sylvia and Jonathan Osborne, covering all things Magic basketball by fans for fans. Go Magic!
What's going on, Orlando Magic fans? You guys are back with the Sixth Man Show. Today is Friday, April 19th, 2024. I'm not Jonathan Osborne. I'm not Luke Sylvia. I'm producer Kevin here for this very special bonus episode of the Sixth Man Show. Here in a little bit, I'll play for you an interview. Jonathan Osborne, host of the Sixth Man Show, got to do with Bob Schmidt, who hosts the Fear the Fro podcast, the Cleveland Cavaliers podcast. Those guys got to go back and forth and kind of preview the series we're about to go through here together, starting on Saturday at 1 o'clock. But before we go through that, I do want to remind you guys of all the different things that are happening as this playoff series tips off. So lots of things happening on Saturday, right? Obviously, we have game one, Saturday, 1 p.m. You can watch that on ESPN. If you're outside the Orlando area or if you're in Central Florida, the game will still be on Bally Sports. But if you are in Central Florida, you should come out to the big watch party on Wall Street with the Sixth Man Show, the Orlando Magic, presented by Michelob Ultra. Big watch party, just like, you know, we did the draft lottery back, you know, in the summer. It's going to be huge. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be hot, though. So, like, hydrate, obviously, you know, mid-90s, you know, when the game's really in the heat of it, you know, around 3 o'clock or so. But, yeah, obviously, there's lots of other places. If you've never been to Wall Street, tons of bars and restaurants there that you can kind of duck under for some shade or some AC, and they'll all have the games on the TVs. But the big party in the middle of the plaza is going to be there, you know, big screen TV showing the game and everything like that. But, yeah, like I said, big watch party for that game and every road match game during this playoff run. So definitely check that out. For us at the Sixth Man Show, here's what you can expect. If you do go to that watch party, after the game at the watch party, our guy Ben Gifford is going to be out there for the next episode of the Sixth Fan Show. You can be out there, let your voice be heard, talk to Ben Gifford. You'll get on the episode. That's always a lot of fun. Win, lose, doesn't matter. You know, obviously share your opinions on the game and on the team. Then obviously I'll be live on YouTube doing our post-game live presented by Rock'em. So definitely check that out. Whether you're, you know, on the way home from the watch party or maybe you watched it at home or wherever you are, tune into that on YouTube live after every single Orlando Magic game. And then Jonathan and Luke later that night or maybe super early Sunday morning will give their thoughts on the game through a brand new episode of the Sixth Man Show. So like I said, we're going hard in the paint, lots of stuff coming at you guys, but definitely tune into everything we put out there on Saturday to recap what is hopefully a very exciting game one. Last thing, before I go into this interview here with Jonathan and Bob Schmidt, just want to remind you about our friends at Jam Hot Chicken. Hey, they open at 11 a.m. on Saturday. So if you're in Central Florida, why don't you head over to Winter Park, get some, you know, awesome chicken from Jam Hot Chicken before you go to the watch party. Plenty of time to do that. Check them out over there in Winter Park, Jam Hot Chicken. And then lastly, our other sponsor here at the Sixth Man Show, Rock'em. Rock'em put out these brand new, I'm showing them if you're watching on YouTube, Everybody In Socks. These are brand new Everybody In Socks that you can get at rock'em.com, whether it's these socks or any other Orlando Magic gear. Just be sure you use that code MAGIC20 at rock'em.com. And hey, they're big supporters of the Magic, the Central Florida company, so definitely give them some love and use that code MAGIC20. Without any further ado, I'm going to hand it over to Jonathan Osborne, who got to sit down with Bob Schmidt of Fear the Fro podcast to preview this series with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
All right, Orlando Magic fans, we are now joined by a very special guest. I think I could call him a frenemy right now in a very joking fashion. Our buddy Fox Sports' Bob Schmidt from the Fear the Fro podcast. He covers the Cleveland Cavaliers. First of all, Bob, thanks so much for taking the time and joining me. How are you feeling as we get close to this this game one Saturday?
I'm excited. I've been ready for this for a while. It kind of feels like since All-Star break, most of the Cavs fans have just been hoping that when we arrived at this point, we'd be mostly healthy. And everybody, I think, is pretty excited for, you know, whatever lays ahead, good, bad, or otherwise.
So I want to start with the elephant in the room. Just get everything out there. You know, we're friends here. We're being honest. What happened against Charlotte? Are the Cavs really going into that game like, hey, we want Orlando? Like, what happened there? What's your understanding of what unfolded last Sunday?
I don't view it. I don't think Orlando fans should take it as a slight to them, because I don't think specifically it was Orlando that they wanted. I think they would have been okay with Orlando or Indiana. Now, to hear JB try to explain it in the post game was a circus. I mean, going into the final game, he had made comments that they have a plan. They're going to rest their starters. They obviously did not play Mitchell. They didn't play Garland. The bigs were supposed to play limited minutes. LeVert didn't play. All those things were known ahead of time. But what calls into question, if, you know, the outcome wasn't what they desired, was that the Cavs, you know, with 6 minutes left in the fourth, they were up by 6 points, and Max Strus had played 30 minutes. We'd lost Craig Porter Jr. to an injury early in the game. So the fact that he decided to take a first-line starter, a real-life starter in Max Strus, and let him run for the triple-double and then pull him out late in the fourth when we're up, it does make people skeptical that they didn't have a rooting interest. I think it's at face value, anyone being honest with themselves has to acknowledge that the Cavs clearly wanted no part of potentially getting a Miami or Philadelphia matchup. And I get it from the standpoint of Philadelphia without Joel Embiid beat this Cavs team twice in February. And the Miami Heat gave the Cavaliers one of the worst beatings of the season in a December game, where it was their bench guys who were doing the scoring. It wasn't a Jimmy Bam special. Bam wasn't even playing. It was, you know, Jaime Jaquez Jr. dropping 20-some points on us. So those teams have traditionally given the Cavs a lot of trouble. Embiid's not a great matchup, and with him back in the fold, understandably the Cavs didn't want that. But I'm not going to sit here and defend the actions. I don't think it was the most courageous thing that we did. I understand the logic to some extent. I know that there's several people who think that the Cavs are cowards, and some have gone so far as to call them reprehensible. And that's fair, but I wouldn't view it as a, you know, a chip on the shoulder, bulletin board material thing if I'm a Magic fan, because truthfully, I think it was much more about avoiding Miami or Philly than it was specifically about wanting the Magic.
Well, speaking logically and being fair in this, I think any team would probably prefer Orlando versus a Philadelphia now that they're getting healthy, or a Miami, you know, just sort of given their history and given their level of experience. Now, throwing logic out the window, if I'm a Magic fan or if I have a rooting interest in this, I want our guys going into this series with bulletin board material. I want them to think that, yeah, Cleveland thought that they wanted us because it was an easier matchup and so on and so forth. And regardless of how much logic there is that goes into that, I do want them going into this series with a little bit of an edge, with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. I'm sure you understand that. Drama aside, right, now that we're in the playoffs and that's sort of what matters, if you were to sort of describe the season that the Cleveland Cavaliers have had, I just want to throw out a couple of numbers really quickly here. These are two teams that are somewhat similar, right, in their play style and some of the advanced metrics, you know, across the course of the season. Neither of these teams this year were setting the scoreboard on fire. The Magic finished 22nd in offensive rating. The Cleveland Cavaliers, a bit better, finished 16th. The Magic finished 3rd in defensive rating. The Cleveland Cavaliers finished 7th in defensive rating. So by all means, like, we're looking for like a very, you know, competitive, probably somewhat chippy, defensive-minded series here, Bob. But how would you describe the Cavalier season up to this point?
You know, I was thinking about that today as we prepared for this. And in a lot of ways, I feel like our teams share a lot of similarities. But as far as the story of the season, I kind of feel like when we were riding highs, you guys were going through it. And when you guys were riding highs, we were going through it. Because you came out of the gates super fast, won like 14 of the first 19 or something like that. And then when we really hit our stride was after Garland and Mobley went down for injuries in that mid-December to January section of the schedule. After All-Star break, it was, I mean, most Cavs fans would say that part was pretty disastrous. Hovering slightly below 500 from All-Star break on, you guys seem to be getting a rhythm coming out of All-Star break and looking more like what you look like in the beginning part of the season. So even though we ultimately finished very close together in the standings, I think the difference between our journeys was that, you know, the Cavs came in hobbled. It took a little while to catch a rhythm. Then all the major injuries happened. They miraculously played the best ball we saw this season when they were shorthanded. And then by the time that the team got healthy, they got less than 10 games together before Donovan Mitchell went down. And the latter part of the season, post All-Star break, has just been waiting for this team to get right and hoping that Donovan Mitchell would be somewhat looking like himself by the time that this matchup came.
And what do you think really has been the cause for that? Like, it has he just not gotten back to 100%? Or because I believe the most recent injury was like the nasal fracture that he was dealing with. Like, why hasn't he quite looked like Donovan Mitchell since he's been back?
Well, the nasal fracture was really just an injury on top of an injury. That got him in a situation where you can question if the mask that he had to wear after he came back kind of threw off his rhythm. But the bigger issue was, you know, the bone bruise and the PRP and coming back from that, because his burst didn't look the same. His ability to get to the rim didn't look the same. His lateral quickness didn't look the same. And it wasn't until, you know, he didn't play in the final game, but the last two games before he got rested in that Charlotte game, he finally started to look like himself. Now, I mean, it was the first time he had cracked 30 points. I mean, he only cracked 20 points after All-Star break, you know, two times until the very end of the season. So they were getting nothing close to what they had got in the beginning of the season, which before the injuries happened, I mean, he was on a trajectory again to be battling for, you know, for a second team all NBA level guy. He was in some of the MVP, you know, fringe candidate conversations. But once the injuries happened and he was no longer kind of, you know, game limit eligible, the play also fell off because of the lingering issues with the bone bruise and the injections and stuff. But it does, I will say, I think every Cavalier fan feels a lot more comfortable that we're going to get a much closer version to 100% Donovan Mitchell based on the final two games before the Charlotte one.
Awesome. Well, awesome for you guys. Might not be that awesome for us. We'll just sort of have to see what happens there. I want to talk a little bit about the matchups between our two teams in the regular season. So 2-2, we split the season series, but it seemed like in each of those games, like we did not have a matchup this year where both teams were fully healthy, right? Like we won one or lost one, won one, lost one, won one. And both of our wins came with Jonathan Isaac in the lineup. But I believe both of those games also came without Donovan Mitchell in the lineup. So it's really hard to judge the regular season series if you're trying to project how this playoff series is going to go. From a Cavs fan perspective, what are you most confident about going into this series? And then what are you also most concerned about going into this series?
I think my concerns, there's two different types of concerns for me. There's internal, you know, concerns as it relates to how the Cavaliers will execute. And then there's the kind about specifically your team. As far as the Cavaliers and what they can control or not control, health would be my biggest concern. A two-game sample of very good Donovan Mitchell is not a very big sample, and I'm hopeful that it is what we're going to get, but we don't know on a game-to-game basis yet. Not to mention, you know, you guys have a very difficult cover in Paolo, and we're down one of our better wing defenders in Dean Wade, who, after just a career game against Boston, he had a baby. He was out for a few days. He came back. He sprained his knee, and we haven't seen him since. So while I don't think that that's going to be the determining factor in any shape or form, the guys that have come back recently, I mean, we're just reintegrating Max. We're just reintegrating Isaac Okoro. We're finally starting to see more from Donovan Mitchell. So health and rhythm and continuity, that's one of the questions I have for the Cavaliers. Because the thing about when I look at your team, I find the bench scary. I do think they have the ability to swing a game where your top line players perform well. You know, I think they have the ability to keep you in games. I mean, the games that we played this season, if you look at the numbers, it's not like Franz and Paolo, outside of Paolo's career game back in December. Outside of that one, I mean, you look at the shooting, the efficiency, the overall performances of those two star players, and that wasn't what was really the swinging factor in those games. It was the bench energy from Mo, from Isaac, from Cole Anthony late in one of those games, getting a perfect shooting night at one point from Joe Ingles when we took you guys on. So those are the things that concern me, is the ability to come into this healthy, because I think our teams, our archetypes are very similar. Defensive slugfest. I do believe that the Cavaliers at full strength have more offensive weapons and probably the ability to more reliably be counted on to produce.
That's fair.
But that being said, you know, most of the story of the second half of the season for the Cavaliers has been they don't have everybody at full strength. So hopefully this first round, while I do think it will be challenging, hopefully at a bare minimum, we come away with our core four intact and the bench all being able to contribute, even if Dean doesn't make it back into the fold, because they're going to need good efforts from Evan, from Jarrett, from Isaac Okoro to slow down a guy like Paolo and to slow down a guy like Franz.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now, there's been some recent conversations, you know, throughout like the NBA landscape, especially when we're talking about like the, you know, all defensive teams. You know, I know that, you know, you all are probably expecting Jared Allen to you know, make one of those defensive teams. And we're hoping our guy, Jalen Suggs, sort of gets the nod as well. But recently I've heard talk around, you know, Evan Mobley and maybe he's not, you know, as far along, you know, as you all, maybe you don't agree with that, you know. After his third season here, where are you with Evan Mobley and sort of what are you expecting from him here in the postseason?
I've definitely heard the talk. I mean, one of the names that will definitely aggravate Cavs fans is Tim Bontemps, because he's pounding the drum on the stagnation of Evan Mobley and the lack of progression. And from a number standpoint, yeah, he's marginally better in most of his categories as far as points and rebounding and efficiency, and he's taking a little bit more from outside, but no, he's not the focal point of the offense. So in some ways I think Cavs tire of that narrative, because yeah, if you base it just on numbers, no, he hasn't made some massive leap, but he's also pretty far down the pecking order when this team is at full strength in terms of usage. So I think there's only so much that's fair to put upon him in terms of, well, your numbers haven't jumped, so you haven't gotten better. Because we've seen in this stretch, especially post All-Star break, where the Cavs were without a healthy Donovan Mitchell and where Darius was playing pretty unevenly, that when he's unleashed, when he plays a little bit more aggressive, Evan is capable of going out and putting up numbers and impacting the game across the box score, passing, defensively, you know, hitting the glass, all those things, playing a hub in the system, you know, dribble handoffs, high screens, all those things. And he's starting to stretch the floor a little bit more. It's not mind-blowing numbers. But I think if the expectation was, okay, he's going to be a superstar, no, he's not there yet. And of course, everybody wants that when they draft a guy in the top five of the lottery. They expect the absolute best. But if what Evan turns out to be is, you know, a transcendent all-NBA level defender year in and year out, who's just better than average offensively, that's still very good. It might not meet everybody's expectations, but I think my frustration is with this core, I'm not one of the people in the camp that feels like Evan Mobley has to be the best player on this team. I just think we need everybody healthy. I'm more concerned about how the guys play together than what their individual ceilings are. Because we have, I mean, if you look at our roster, it doesn't seem like scoring and offense should be an issue. There's a lot of guys who can put the ball in the bucket. The concerns with Evan are more from a fit standpoint, I think. Most Cavalier fans who have issues about Evan, it has nothing to do with his counting numbers. It has to do with, can he play alongside Jared Allen in a way that it doesn't hamper the offense? Because in that injury stretch where he and Garland were out, the Cavaliers' offense performed at a level that we haven't seen since, you know, LeBron teams, in terms of just the points they were putting up each game. They were hovering around, you know, 120 points a game on a regular basis, blowing teams away, just coming out of the gate super fast in the first quarter, which I know is, generally speaking, kind of the opposite of what Orlando's experienced this year. But after we got full strength, not the crazy part is, not only did our offense regress, but our defense got worse. Our defense performed better in that stretch when it was essentially Allen and Mitchell surrounded by all the shooters. And one of those magic games, you may remember the Sam Merrill game where he hit,
unfortunately, 8 of 13 from behind the arc. Yeah.
That was a microcosm of what we were seeing. Guys who aren't expected to play these. Sam might have trouble just cracking the rotation here in this first round. But during that stretch, there were plenty of nights he or some of the other guys, Okoro or Dean, that you weren't expecting a ton from him. A Max Strus game where he hits, you know, 5 3-pointers and buries a 60-foot buzzer beater in February. Like role guys that you weren't necessarily expecting to thrive. They had huge moments in that stretch. And what every Cavs fan has been hoping for is that when we're at full strength, we can produce somewhere closer to that level.
Earlier in the season when I was on your podcast, another guy that we talked about was Darius Garland, and you shared some of your concerns there. We've talked about Donovan Mitchell, how like recently he's been hampered just sort of by injuries. Darius Garland is a guy that at least the numbers will tell you has regressed a little bit this season. What's been your takes on Darius throughout the season, and what do you expect from him come playoff time?
I would agree. I think it's fair to say that it seems like he's regressed a bit. I haven't worried too much about shooting percentages this year from the standpoint of last offseason, the priority was bring in shooters, volume shooters. And they went and they got Strus and they got Yang, and then they developed Merrill to the point where those three have vastly changed how this offense seems to play when we're at full strength. We put up a lot more three-pointers, and it seems like whether they're falling or not, you feel a lot more confidence that they could. Now, if you look at the percentages, yeah, Max has taken a step back. Yang's taken a step back. Those were guys who, Yang was a 40% three-point shooter every season. He's not this year, but he's come on as the seasons come along. Max, whether he puts all of them in or not, whether you would like him to make them at a little bit higher clip, you look at that and you say, well, he's still putting up almost 8 per 36 minutes, and they respect him. And that was the whole thing, was they needed that respect to create spacing for guys like Evan and Jarrett. So when it comes to Darius, yeah, I think we can all agree that there's times his late game decisions have frustrated Cavs fans. There's times where with Donovan out, we wanted him to score more, and he simply didn't do that. But from a getting guys involved in the offense, I thought he did a pretty solid job of that after Donovan went down. It's just tough because you expect him to do that and also to score when we're so shorthanded. I think he has the luxury now with Donovan being back that people will be far less critical of him because we don't need as much from him. He's still an elite ball handler, a very good creator. If he's not facilitating all the time, it cuts down on the gravity of these late game poor decisions. He's not going to be the one making everyone. I mean, there's going to be some A and B with him and Donovan, where maybe some of those late game situations with Donovan back to himself, it takes the pressure off of him a bit. That's what I'm hopeful for anyway, because the biggest thing is after he broke his jaw, I thought prior to that jaw injury, he was playing very good. He was finishing at the rim at a level that was better than previous seasons. And that all but abandoned him in the second half of the season. It took him a while to get back into it. And as we've gone along, it's been somewhat uneven in the second half of the season. But I think every Cav fan probably feels better about Darius when he's alongside Donovan, because it takes so much of the pressure off. And to a lesser extent, just Max's reintegration has seemed to vastly improve things too. Because one of the things I don't think any Cav fan expected about Strus when they brought him in was he's been shockingly good as a secondary creator and running two-man actions with Evan and Jarrett. And having him gone while Donovan was gone, it puts a lot of pressure on Darius to have to create essentially everything. So to have both those guys in the mix, I guess I'm optimistic that Darius might not light it up every night, but to put him in a situation where he can attack situations where they try to throw doubles and traps at Donovan and vice versa, I think it's critical to have them both out there, because the Magic have such elite point of attack defenders and such a sound fundamental defensive team. They need all the weapons they can get to try to keep Orlando as honest as possible, so they can't just load up and trap everyone. I would have been much more concerned if it was just Darius, because that's what teams were doing when we were without Donovan. They were just throwing high traps at Darius, and he is far worse at getting the ball up and over those to the release valves than a guy like Donovan, who manages to split doubles all the time, seemingly.
Yeah, we talked about, again, how neither of these teams were really fully healthy during any of our, you know, four matchups throughout the season, and we split those. But aside from that, you know, now it sounds like you all are relatively healthy, except from Dean Wade. It sounds like from a Cavs fan perspective, how do you all see this series playing out?
Well, I think this is my hope. Obviously, this is not your hope. This is the opposite of what you would
Yes.
hope. My hope is that I think the Magic's, you know, physicality, the bench, I think those are things that are going to give us trouble. And I've seen it happen enough times that I think that will sustain. The thing that's been the story of this season for me is that our chances to win are largely going to depend on how consistent your frontline stars are. And with this being their first playoff experience, I think the hope has to be, one of the things that I was extremely encouraged by when I was looking at the numbers and just looking back at these games, was how well Mobley and Okoro did in terms of impacting Paolo's efficiency. Now, Franz, sometimes I think that's just him missing shots. Like, I didn't necessarily put that all in the Cavs game plan. I think he missed his first 10 three-pointers over the first two games. And there was a game where he didn't even score until the third quarter.
That's largely been the Franz Wagner experience this year, although he's been really good, you know, averaged almost 20 points a game. Just the shooting has fallen off a cliff, you know, comparatively to the first couple of years.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's hard to look at this regular season based on the injuries both teams had, and then based on just these outlier good and bad performances. Because the same night that Paolo was dropping a career high on us, Franz was objectively horrible. So if both those guys show up with the bench that you have, I think we'd have some problems. And I think Isaac is a difference maker. I found that whole development super intriguing in terms of, you look at the lineup analytics, and the Magic were not a bad team with you know, Wendell in there. And then in this late part of the season, I'm seeing you guys roll Isaac out with more frequency and starting even. And it makes me wonder, okay, well, what was the development there? Because analytically, it wasn't bad. I mean, you were winning games post All-Star break. And then is it just health? All of a sudden, Isaac, is it a place where he can take on a larger workload? Because that's the thing I'm curious to see, how it will develop. I watched the game, your last game of the season against the Bucks, and I thought it was interesting seeing not just what a world record Isaac looked in that game. I know the box score said he finished with three blocks, but I watched him change multiple possessions, where disrupting Middleton shots when he was trying to get to the middle of the lane, stopping Dame at the rim, making him miss everything. And then he took a high volume of corner threes that it was interesting watching how you guys played with him. And that's the thing I'm curious to see, is how you decide to deploy these units, just based on, we didn't get much of Isaac. We missed two games of him in the regular season. And when he's here, he was a massive factor in that game where your bench had like seven offensive rebounds between he and Mo. And that was a game where you really saw how important he can be. That's one of the things that I want to see in this early part of the series, where teams are, where you guys roll out a plan, and depending on what plays out, where teams make adjustments, what that balance will be between your front court rotations.
Yeah. Those of you that are listening to our show, Bob and myself, we're getting ready to record another episode after this for his show. So I'm sure we'll get, sort of into more of the Magic specifics there. But yeah, with J.I., it's really just the fact that he's been able to get to a point where, he's really healthy, and the Magic are willing, now you're getting to the end of the season. It's like, well, if you're going to hold him for anything, it's really for this time of year. And the Magic, just with them needing to get off to better starts, it's really just about getting your best five guys out there, and Jonathan Isaac being such a big part of that. I definitely agree with a lot of what you're saying, and the way that you see the series playing out. I want to ask you just, what is your prediction? I'll give my prediction as well after you. But like, who's winning this series, and how many games, and why do you see it going that way?
I'm hopeful the Cavs win in six. That would be what my prediction would be. And I'll know a lot more after the first game when I see how Donovan looks. But I do think you guys are going to run into a lot of the same stuff that we probably did last year. It is, no matter how elite of a defense you are. I mean, last year, that first round series between the Knicks and us, our teams were, even though we lost, we were the best defense in the NBA in the postseason. It's just that we were so bad at scoring, and our three-point shooting was so horrific that we couldn't even win those rock fights. And sometimes it's just who has the best leadership in those moments, who can cobble together enough offense. And I'm hopeful that the Cavaliers, having been here, knowing the stakes, having everybody kind of at full strength, and having the offensive options that they do, will be able to, outperform the Magic. But again, I do feel like I've been spoiled by watching fairly pedestrian games from Paolo and Franz, and knowing they can do a hell of a lot more. There's not many times that you're going to have those two guys shoot as poorly as some of the games during this regular season series.
Yeah, well, as you know, a lot of this is going to change during the playoffs, and just like the level of attention that Paolo has been, given from opposing defenses is probably just going to increase as we get into the playoffs. Like, I know you watched that last game against the Bucks, but for the first 7-8 minutes of that game, we just could not generate the offense. And I think Jonathan Isaac's corner three volume was a product of that, because the Bucks were totally fine giving that up. And a lot of those possessions, that was the best look that you were going to get. And unfortunately, we haven't got as many games this season as we would have liked of Paolo and Franz both playing really well. It seemed like those guys would just sort of switch back and forth. And then a determining factor was how many other guys could you get to step up and contribute to the offense, whether that was Jalen Suggs in the starting lineup, or if it was Cole Anthony or Joe Ingles or Mo Wagner for the most part in that bench lineup. So we still very much have those same concerns going into the playoffs. When you compare these two teams and you look at like offensive rating and defensive rating and even pace, right? Some of the lower scoring teams in the league, some of the better defensive teams in the league, they both play at a relatively slow pace. Where the Cavs really have a big difference is not necessarily the three-point percentage, but the volume of threes that they take. And when you shoot even a little bit better than one team and you're willing to take a lot more threes, that math is really going to be in your favor. So you've got the Cavs in six. I, being the optimist that I am, I have the Magic in seven, because I do feel like I appreciate that very much. And I do feel that if the Magic are going to win this series against the Cavs, it's going to be in seven. They're not sweeping the Cavs. It's not going to be a five-game series. The Magic would be very fortunate if it became a six-game series. But I do believe if the Magic are going to pull it out, it's going to have to be a game seven on the road. And they're going to have to get it with their defense. And if the series is even going to get to seven games, they're probably going to need a few games where they get really hot from behind the arc, whether that's, you know, Paolo, or if we have a reemergence of Franz Wagner and his shooting from behind the arc, because that has not been great. But we've had some really,
I think we're going to get some Ingles and Yang trash talking. Maybe.
Well, that's definitely, that is an absolute must. By the end of this series, Cleveland as a whole are going to hate Joe Ingles, Jalen Suggs, and Mo Wagner. That's really just the way. There's no other outcome that is possible in this situation. But we're going to need, you know, the guys that shot well from behind the arc during the regular season. There's probably going to have to be a little bit of an uptick in volume, only because Cleveland is going to dare those guys to shoot, and they're going to have to knock down those shots in order to make this really a competitive series. And at the end of the day, I think I speak probably for most Magic fans, where we're at the point where we're getting a playoff series, where if the Cavs come out and just completely obliterate the Magic, the silver lining will be sort of what yours was last year. Hey, we know exactly what we need to go after in free agency, and the way that Cleveland addressed that this post offseason, the Magic will sort of have their own blueprint of, hey, if we want to be competitive in the postseason where it really matters, we know what we're going to, you know, have to go out and get. So I appreciate you taking the time coming on here. You want to let people know where they can find your Cavs coverage throughout the postseason here?
Yeah. Anywhere you podcast, it's called the Fear the Fro podcast. So Spotify, Apple, wherever. And that's the same as the Twitter handle, at Fear the Fro Pod.
Awesome. Well, Bob, thanks for taking the time and good luck coming up here, but hopefully not too much luck.
I'm looking forward to a great series, and I wish you guys the best of luck, but same, not too much luck. A sufficient amount of luck. Enough luck to make you feel good at the end of this, but for us to be still playing in 3 weeks.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Again, like Jonathan said, appreciate Bob taking some time out of his day to preview this series, what hopefully is a very exciting and entertaining series. If you want to hear more, obviously, about this matchup and about the series, go check out Bob's content at Fear the Fro podcast. Obviously, all series long, but Jonathan also did an episode with him, another preview episode, a separate preview episode on his channel. So obviously, check out all the stuff Bob does over there at Fear the Fro. Again, thanks to Bob for hanging out with us for a little bit. But yeah, that's going to do it for this episode, guys. Don't forget, again, Saturday, big game one, watch party at Wall Street. We'll be here with the Six Man Show post game live on YouTube after the game. The Six Fan Show at the watch party will be there. And of course, a brand new episode of the Six Man Show to recap it all. So here we go. This is what we've been waiting for all season long. Magic playoff basketball tips off Saturday. I'm excited. I know you are too. But until then, let's go Magic.
Thanks for listening to the Sixth Man Show. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and Spotify to get new episodes downloaded directly to your phone. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to give us a 5-star rating and a review. It helps out the show a lot. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Sixth Man Show. We'll catch you guys next time. Go Magic!